Welcome back to the Political Cesspool, everyone, here in the second hour and last hour of our program tonight. We're here with former Reagan appointee and author of the book Why Johnny Can't Think, Bob Whitaker. You can be Bob, the full title is Why Johnny Can't Think, America's Professor Priesthood by Bob Whitaker. And again, you can have Bob's ear, and that's something we're very proud of on this program. We get these stars in like Bob Whitaker, and we make them accessible to our listeners at 872-8862. Again, that's a new number, 872-8862. Give us a call and be on the air.
Let me mention something to you. How would you like to be the producer of Hannity's show and try to find people dumb enough that he can deal with?
Well, he found them, I believe.
If I was the producer of Hannity's show, that would mean I'd have to work with him every day, and that in and of itself would do me in.
He's just so dumb. I mean, it's pathetic.
Well, he's got his pedigree as far as the establishment and respectability
is
concerned.
Is a kept opposition that is stupid and cowardly. And I explained that in the book, too.
And you can get the book at readbob.com. And this is something I want to touch on, because you were commenting on this before we had our influx of callers in the last segment. I think what people need to realize is that people who are blacklisted and people who are ostracized, and you said your publisher wanted to burn all correspondence with you, one of the people you went to get the book printed.
Yeah, he had already accepted the book. I had a couple of successful books.
Well, because you're a big name in Washington.
The small publisher said, gosh, we got something here. And he accepted it, and apparently then they read it. And a month later, he wrote me, not only was he not going to publish it, but he was going to destroy all correspondence relating to it. Now, I have never heard of such a thing.
Now, but I'll tell you where I come from. When I hear something like that, that makes me buy your book.
Well, I don't know. That's why I keep wondering. The people on our side don't seem to.
Well, we'll get into that more in a second. At 872-8862, caller, you're on the air with Bob Whitaker.
This is Joe Maddock again. I can't let Mr. Whitaker go. I'm on your site, and it says a plague on both your houses. First of all, could you comment on what that is?
I want to say this really quickly, and I'm going to let you ask that question again, but this is radio. You got the website. He's on it. And he's calling you back up, so we're doing good here.
Well, the second question, Mr. Whitaker, is you talked about a priesthood. This priesthood, can it trickle down to pre-K through, say, control of the NEA or something like that?
Well, they don't exactly have to take control of the NEA.
Yeah.
The education professors own the teachers. The teachers own the NEA, and the NEA owns the PTA.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a wholly owned subsidiary. of the NEA. I mean, everybody knows that. I was on the Education and Labor Committee in Oversight, and you know, if you don't know that, they sort of bounce you. Some of these things, everybody theorizes. Remember, this was my daily work, so...
It's really no longer about education, is it? It's more about indoctrination.
Yes, nothing else. I mean, I have pointed out in the book, again, that theological seminaries teach Greek, they teach you Latin, they teach you history, but they're still theological seminaries. And that is what we have. We have liberal seminaries. That's what they are. And they are a religious institution, and the professors are priests of political correctness, and I mean legally. A lot of stuff I sound like, when I say, what they used to say, we laugh and we joke, but we don't play. I mean what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And I think, first of all, when you talk, I was saying before, when religion, when people, Bob Jones or anybody else, when they start talking, they always say, we want to teach religion in the schools. But they never take into account, they always act as if the other side were teaching something else.
Mm-hmm.
The other side is not teaching something else. The other side is teaching a religion.
Mm-hmm.
And they ought to, well, they won't, because they're selected too, but they have to come in and say, we won't teach our religion, too.
So I'm guessing this might be your first time on the website. You find yourself in agreement with a lot that our guest has to say?
So far, I guess total agreement. I'm looking at the website, and we'll order probably here from the website why Johnny can't think, because sounds like it'd be a very interesting book to read.
Well, we appreciate the call again, Joe, and thank you for the comment.
Okay, bye-bye.
Go ahead.
Bob, talk a little bit about what went on in Canada, because you were talking earlier.
That was my next question. Let me say this, because you hijacked, you raped my mind. Let me ask you this, because the point I was making before our last caller was that when I see something like this, when I see the government or the mainstream press crack down on somebody for their ideas, to me that tells me that person's right on target, and I want to find out what they have
That's
to say.
That's what it should mean to Americans, but you know, I wish our people would pay attention. Well, one guy got searched. He got caught with Why Johnny Can't Think
as he was going over the border into Canada.
Yeah, and they seized the book, and they took it, and they questioned it, and they beat it, and they kept it for 2 months. And then I think they looked up. Now, this is intergovernment stuff. I think they looked into the record under Robert W. Whitaker, and they found out that I was one of the aviation negotiators years before in Canada.
Oh.
And they figured that, you know, maybe not. You know, it wouldn't be worth the trouble.
But now Canada does that, and I don't want to name these people out, but they do this to a lot of authors. I mean, your book, like, on a list there?
They questioned it, they jailed it, they beat it, but they finally let it go.
But it is now legal. But did they just see the book in this guy's backpack or whatever and just take it, or was it already on a list to be, you know, this?
Well,
be
he
on
was
lookout.
On the list.
Oh, he was on the list. Okay, yeah. So anything he has is by association.
Yeah.
Well.
But
at least they didn't burn it, because I know they do that to.
Well, let me tell you something about that burning bit. It's really. Because, again, I say political correctness is a religion, and I say the Inquisition never ended. Do you know that during the Inquisition, if somebody somebody's family got tortured and then executed, the family had to pay for the torture chamber, the time of the torture, the wood, the whole thing?
Right.
If in Canada you receive a banned book, it is burned by the authorities and a bill is sent to you.
And you got to pay
for the burning.
That's right. You've got to pay for the burning.
Straight out of the Inquisition.
And you've got to pay for the storage or throwing away of the ashes, I guess.
Yeah.
Canada is actually burning books that are politically incorrect. And let me just say, because I know American Free Press, they call it another thing. They call it cultural communism.
Yeah.
And what that is basically, if you don't think the way the state government tells you to think, then you're not only are you wrong, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
Because America doesn't really embrace free speech anymore, especially if you do like you do, Bob, and that is laugh at these phony arguments that the liberals would have us take seriously.
This leads on to another point that as communism turned out not to work, they had to get nastier and nastier and nastier. And here is the problem. These people know that nothing they do works. Nothing the left does ever works. Now, that's one of the continuing things in my book. I give example after example after example. They don't work. Therefore, the only recourse they have is to get nastier and nastier and nastier. They have to ban things. They have to crush people. And that's what they're doing.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. And it's, you know, totally would fly in the face of what anyone would think possible in America.
Mm-hmm.
But it's happening. And you can call in and have the ear, ask a question, or make a comment to Bob Whitaker at 872-8862. Don't forget to check out readbob.com. Before you go there on the Internet, give Bob a call. He's in the studio tonight at 872-8862. Jess, I know you had a couple of things off the beaten path you wanted to ask Bob.
Yeah, apart from his book, Bob's got a very interesting website at WhitakerOnline.org, and I wanted to ask him to elaborate on some of his writings and intellectual meanderings that he has posted on his website.
Don't meander.
Well, one is a quote that you say, and I'd like you to elaborate on this a little bit, that Europeans are just Yankees.
Well, yeah. I mean, I have one thing there that says, you know, Kerry said there are two Americas, and I said there are two Europes and one America, because there's absolutely no difference between the opinion of Massachusetts and the opinion of France. They're the same place. The Europeans and liberals are exactly the dominant opinion. That's why I think that when Europe gets hit with terrorism, it's going to really tear them apart, because can you imagine a nation run by Teddy Kennedy trying to deal?
I like the way you word it as fashionable leftist.
Yeah, and it's, but it's. I mean, what is the difference? Do you really think the average liberal in Massachusetts would have find anything to talk about with the average liberal in England? They're the same people.
Yeah.
And so, basically, the only people who are not just like Europeans are what they call our red states.
Right.
So those are the only Americans. There are two Europes, one of which is in the United States.
I like that. And speaking of terrorism, and I don't want to get too far into Iraq, but you had a question about what's going on in Iraq and the reconstruction there that America's behind.
Well, Bob made a good point in one of his articles pertaining to Iraq, where he mentioned that, or questioned whether or not we in the United States and our government is more or less recreating what the British Empire had put together years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if you would talk about that some.
Well, what they call Iraq, the reason it's there, this is even more so in Africa, where you have, anyway, in Iraq, it was an administrative unit of the British Empire. And that is what we call a sovereign nation. It has nothing to do with the people inside it. In Africa, they split it up into districts, and you have tribes, and the tribes are the real nations in Africa. They're like 2 million, 3 million, 5 million, and they all speak the same language, and they split into different countries, and they're killing each other. And the real nations, instead of having the, you know, all this United Nations as the last name in the world it should have, the nations in Africa are actually split into British administrative colonial pieces.
Right.
It has nothing to do with the nations, which are the tribes.
Right.
And Iraq is just another example of that. These ridiculous things, the United Nations. I wish we would form a real United Nations, meaning, you know, like Southerners and...
I know you're talking to a member of the SCV. I'm like an unofficial member. Okay, so we all know what's going on here.
Yeah. a nation is a whole different thing from a political unit.
And don't forget, you can give Bob a call here and ask a question of him, make a comment. 872-8862. Be on the air tonight live with Bob Whitaker at 872-8862. We're talking about his new book, Why Johnny Can't Think, America's Professor of Priesthood. Again, to reiterate myself again, Bob was a former Capitol Hill staffer, worked in the Reagan administration, and was a aviation negotiator. So give him a call at 872-8862. Something that was on your website that I saw today, people probably don't know about this. And again, what I really respect about you is that you've got it right. The quickest way to deflate an argument, because a lot of these things that we debate in the public atmosphere, in the public arena, should not be debatable at all. They're just open and shut places. And what you say is the biggest way to deflate these liberals is just laugh at them, show them what fools they are, and walk on. But to give them credibility builds them up, and it makes their ideas real.
Well, let me give you an example of this on Capitol Hill, a method I've used. Have you got a minute? Or?
Sure, yeah. And
my boss was the ranking member of the crime committee, crime subcommittee, the judiciary committee. And there's a tactic I use, and in this case, the Carter administration had come up with a real smart idea. They weren't going to register guns, they were going to register ammunition. And what we did was, I wrote that down, he said, he asked the BATF people that were testifying, he said, is this a first step towards registering guns? And they gave him this long answer. And he said, is this a first step toward registering guns? And they gave another answer, you know, and kept on talking. And he said, for the third time, is this the first step? He said that six times. Then he put them under oath.
Wow.
And their answers changed completely.
Well, and that's no surprise at all. And you know, we've experienced the same thing. Not a lot of liberals will come on our show, but the ones that do will not answer questions.
Yeah.
So they might as well not come.
That's
on.
Why I want a professor for lunch. I'd love to see somebody try to answer. I mean, nobody ever does.
Well, I would love to hear a liberal actually answer a question. I don't think that's ever happened.
Well, and maybe that proves Bob's point. They know in their hearts that none of their ideas ever work.
Well, let me ask something. You think Sean Hannity is going to get an answer out of anybody? Tell me.
He just gets into base argument that's meaningless and goes nowhere.
Yeah.
And but you know, he's got his group of followers, and I think the reason he is so popular is because he is just comfortable, and that's all.
Well,
he doesn't really challenge intellectual thought, like you said, dumb and dumbing down, but he makes people feel comfortable.
Do you think we could convince Rupert Murdoch to change the format and make it Whitaker and Edwards?
Well, he's on there because he's all they've got. That's all. They say the liberals have, and if you think about it, that's what Joe Sobrin says about my book. It's not subtle. I'm just saying things that absolutely everybody knows.
But see, and that's the thing. See, and this is another problem with cultural communism, which I mean is political correctness. We are not allowed now to say in America things that everyone knows to be fundamentally true.
Yeah.
We cannot speak the truth in America anymore. We have to be all things to all people, and everybody's equal, and it doesn't matter if you work or not. And it doesn't matter. And that's communism, you know.
Sure.
But and another thing, we're talking about Hannity. Another reason why he is what he is because have you ever seen him disagree with the Republican Party line on anything?
Right.
I mean, they never do any wrong.
Yeah. Well, he's not supposed to.
But Bob, keep in mind, James is actually a closet Hannity fan.
I see. Yeah, I can tell y'all are basically in love with the guy. Yeah.
We keep invoking his name on here. We're going to have to pay him royalty.
But, I mean, I have corresponded with Combs, and he's no intellectual giant either. But
was that correspondence in English, or was that in his foreign alien tongue?
Well, I tend to correspond in blunt.
Well, that's something I like to ask. I like to ask personal questions that people would ask if they were able to interview. What was you don't have to necessarily tell us what the correspondence was, but what kind of attitude did he treat you with?
He was very friendly.
Was he really?
Yes.
I think his role on that show is basically Sean's whipping boy.
Yeah.
And he knows that.
I met him at this new media convention up in New York, and we talked a while, and he read the foreword to my book in about 2 minutes and said, I know Joe Sobrin disagrees with me. He was polite.
Well, see, that's another thing people need to understand. I mean, you've been around these people for decades, and you are among, or were, if you had chosen to stay, the elite of Washington. I mean, you can go to these parties, and you can talk to these people.
Well, the elite doesn't run things. While those people are at those parties, we run things.
Right.
The staff, you know, that's what we get hired for. Now,
right.
I'm not saying that staff has the power. Somebody said one time to me, some farmer, he was, this farmer's group was there, and he said, well, you people have the real power. And I said, the minute I start thinking that, I'm out the door.
Yeah.
The congressman hires you, and he really the trust he puts in you is just...
Right.
Terrifying. But, you find out what he wants, you carry it out.
That's right.
And so the real power, because the congressman has spent all his time being out in public.
Well, it's kind of like you say on your website about the Army. The generals are the ones that that do all that, and the sergeants are the ones that do all the
until
work.
Until it gets to the sergeant, it's paperwork.
That's right. That's the way it is in Washington,
but
too.
But let me tell you something. I don't care how many medals of honor he's got, you don't get a star on your cylinder if you're not just another bureaucrat.
You got to tote the line
yes,
to get
sir.
Up to that point.
Yeah.
I wouldn't doubt that. We've had some good conversations with military people around here that would testify to that. And you can, too, by calling 872-8862. Don't forget to check out readbob.com. But give us a call at 872-8862 and be on the air with us tonight. But
we can have leaflets there. They're trying to start a leaflet campaign. Like I say, if you keep in mind that we have a right to put leaflets on campus, we have a right to have a say on campus because it's our campus.
Is there repercussions for thinking outside the box in campus once you're already in?
No joke.
Well, tell me what they are. I mean, because let's just say you snuck in, you're unrespectable, and you've gotten into college.
Yeah.
What happens if you try to? Because I know, and again, I got to be careful what I say on the air, but I know there's a person who is hosting a very politically incorrect speaker at the University of Colorado recently. And having this with public...
Was he left wing or right wing?
He was right wing.
Oh, really? I'm astonished.
I'll tell you about it in the break. But let's just say this student is having this remarkably politically incorrect guy in on the campus to speak. Mm-hmm. And the people get wind of it and they don't like it. What happens to these people? Can they get thrown out of school for this?
Which people?
What happens to the student that's politically incorrect in college?
No, in that case, if they've approved it, probably nothing.
But hypothetically, they just go around and they don't conform. They challenge the professors on the issue.
Right. Well, he'll never become a professor for starters.
Well, but do these people still graduate? I mean, I'm talking about students.
Oh, yeah.
It's not
graduate.
That bad.
Well, it is sometimes.
It's harder if they're in graduate school.
Yeah.
Graduate school is harder?
In graduate school, it's much harder because then they nobody, let me repeat something. All a professor does for the public is sign a piece of paper saying that someone finished a course.
That's it.
That's the entire job of a professor. The rest of it is, as I said in the book over and over, is pleasing other professors.
Well, let me change the subject really quickly, and you're right about that, of course. But what I was going to
say.
Yeah, you told me in the break you like positive reinforcement, so I'm trying to call it here.
Good.
All right. But something on your website that I saw today, people probably hadn't heard about it. This goes back to the whole politically correct, respectable conservative, you won't hear an outcry of it because they don't turn on their own. And they're allowed so much leash to cry foul, but not much. Pink House. People probably hadn't heard about what's going on with the Pink House scandal. Do you know what I'm talking about? It was on your website.
No, but sometimes somebody put, some of my team.
Oh, I got you. All right, I might have to interview your...
I delegate a lot.
Well, it was... The story was...
I have three rules for my team. Do it, and do it in that order.
And just put your name on the bottom.
I will take the heat.
Well, I'll tell you what. We got 2 or 3 minutes before the commercial break. Do you know the story I'm talking about? I'm going to turn it over to your assistant here. Now, you stay on. I'm going to let him talk to you for a minute and get your opinion on it.
All right.
Kind of break it out. Introduce yourself and break it out.
My name is Greg, and I'm a friend of Bob's. I'm helping him with the book tour. And basically what the scandal is that there's this reporter, so-called reporter for a phony news organization who's running around the White House under a fake name. And he had credentials issued by the White House, and these liberals, he was throwing these softball questions to President Bush. I mean, really embarrassingly conservative, just horribly conservative, looking. But they got so bad, the liberals started looking into who this guy is, and they found out he's a gay prostitute. And here's a gay prostitute, and he had pictures of himself all over the website, naked, advertising his services. And this guy was let into the White House and given credentials to be within 10 feet of the president, and yet it takes most journalists like 3 or 4 months to get a press pass. And no one will talk about it. The mainstream media won't talk about it. And even the Christian conservatives on the website or World Magazine, they act like this is a non-story. And it's a huge scandal.
A pervert in the White House?
And that's so what's your theory there, Bob?
Well, prostituting yourself is a very honored and ancient part.
Why will no one touch the story? Why will Sean Hannity won't touch the story? Why would nobody touch the story?
Well, now, Sean Hannity or nobody, I mean, I'm a little mystified as to why liberals won't touch the story. You say liberals won't.
Nobody will touch it.
Oh.
Well, probably
a few bloggers, a few liberal bloggers are touching it, but the
really?
Mainstream media is just blowing it off.
Well, this would be someone that would normally come from the liberal ranks, so they're going to stay away from that as well.
And it makes gays look bad. I mean, gay
right.
prostitution, they don't want to condemn that. But why?
I honestly can't explain it. You know, you're the one with the explanation.
Well, my theory is that there's this, you know.
Well, if he can get a White House press pass, I guess there's hope for Austin yet, isn't there?
There you go. No, my theory is that it's just the tip of the iceberg as far as the perversion and corruption in the White House.
Well, Austin, I did not laugh at that. Now, when I'm on and if I get on here again and you're here, please, I did not laugh at that joke.
No, that was Herbert. But the fact of the matter is, the reason I brought that up is just the fact that, you know, this is... They won't call somebody out on this. I mean, the Bush. There's nothing wrong with this. There's nothing wrong with being a gay prostitute and being an arm's length away from the president. There's no outcry, and it's like I read on your blog. I can't necessarily say who's writing this down, but what it says is there's no different in what he's doing though, and he's running a homosexual website, and he's got these press credentials, and he's not a member of the press. But at the end of the day, there's no different in what he's doing. And what everybody else in the White House is doing, and what everybody on Capitol Hill is doing.
Yeah.
You know, it's all one and the same.
Yeah, well, I am a little puzzled because usually, you see, actually, when I was on Capitol Hill, one thing that the press kept us pretty clean.
Did they?
Because they watched every word we said. It was the liberals who got into trouble because no matter what they did, they didn't get reported until the thing turned into a major blast.
Right.
We always had the old Capitol Hill rule: if you don't want to see it in the front on the front page of the Washington Post,
don't
write it down. You know, and we had to follow that rule. Teddy Kennedy didn't.
Well, we're gonna pick up more on that after our last break of the evening. Remember, the number to call to talk to Bob Whitaker is 872-8862. 872-8862. Write it down and give us a call on the other side of this commercial break. You're listening to The Political Cesspool with James Edwards and Austin Farley. Although Jess Bonds is filling in tonight, you can check us out on the web at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org. We're back right after this. Welcome back to the Political Cesspool. Thank you for joining us here on this Tuesday evening here in Memphis. Don't forget to check us out on the web at thepoliticalcesspool.org. There you can find a lot of information. Our guest of the week, we update that site every Sunday evening. Biographies for Austin and myself, a list of our future guests, a links page which documents some of our favorite destinations on the Internet. Bob Whitaker's website is on there. We have advertising information, a storefront, and a way you can contact us. All that at thepoliticalcesspool.org. A lot of changes coming up to the website. We're going to have streaming audio live. You'll be able to listen in here in Memphis from your computer, and your friends will be able to listen in from anywhere in the country and indeed the world at thepoliticalcesspool.org. That's coming very soon to our website. So we're excited about that. Again, we have Bob Whitaker in tonight, author of the book, Why Johnny Can't Think, America's Professor Priesthood. You can talk to Bob by giving us a call, and we encourage you to do so at 872-8862.
I wanted to make another comment. I discovered today that all these Memphis people here, that I was in Memphis before they were.
That's right. You, coming into the studio tonight, you're the elder statesman, is that right?
My brother went to medical school here.
You told me about that.
And we came over for a few weeks at a time. A week or so until he kicked me out.
He kicked you out.
And so I know the old Memphis, you know.
Well, yeah, and I want to be as subtle as possible, but I guess Memphis isn't as glamorous as it used to be.
It wouldn't be as glamorous.
Has Memphis, has the stock in Memphis risen or fallen since the 1950s, as far as you're concerned?
Uh, I was pretty limited because I was visiting medical students, going to the medical school. You know, I was mostly interested in him being in medical school. My other brother got kicked out of the house, and he went down and worked in Tupelo, Mississippi on a brick plant for a
while. Nothing wrong with that.
But they had I guess you really have to be in my generation to remember that at that time it was illegal to blow your car horn anywhere in Memphis.
You told me about that on the
that.
Phone. You remember that, Jeff?
Yes, I do remember that.
Oh, come on.
Yep.
Without further ado, I know Jess has something he wants to chime in on, a question he had written down for you. Again, give us a call at 872-8862. New number. Jess, you've got something on China.
Well, I think we've got a call.
Oh, we do have a call. Okay. I wasn't even paying attention. Caller, you're on the air with Bob Whitaker.
Mr. Whitaker, I thought the last person in Washington, D.C. that spoke blunt like you was Davy Crockett.
I knew his daddy.
Well, I'm sure glad to know that there is a statesman up there that does speak blunt.
Well, I was up there.
Yeah, he's up there.
Well, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I didn't think there'd been one in my lifetime.
Well, there was, for sure, because I didn't miss a whole lot of words up there.
Well, I look forward to getting your book and reading it, sir, and I hope that you come back again.
Oh, they apparently haven't had enough yet.
We're high on Bob. He's going to be in at least once a month, either on the phone or here in person.
Well, I'm high on Bob. And, you know, I didn't get to hear the whole program tonight, but I do have one question for you.
Sure.
How was the real Ronald Reagan?
Just like the one you saw. I want to tell you something about Ronald Reagan. And this will take a minute, okay?
Take your time.
Yeah, well, good, right.
Actually, I'm talking about me, too, my favorite subject. But back in, by the way, do you remember the remark that Tennessee Ernie Ford made when Jimmy Carter was elected president?
He said, no, sir.
Thank God we finally got a president who doesn't have an accent. But I was called in 1977 at one of those Washington parties. A Kennedy staffer, a fellow introduced me, a Kennedy staffer, and talked to me, and he said, "Bob," he said, "you're a Southerner, you know your business. Is Jimmy Carter smart?" Now, Jimmy Carter had. This was a Teddy Kennedy staffer. Jimmy Carter had just gotten through taking the Democratic nomination that he wanted, that Teddy Kennedy won desperately.
Well, it sold his soul for.
Huh? Yeah. Well, he hadn't got that anymore, but anyway. But what I'm saying is, this fellow was asking me, I mean, if Jimmy Carter was dumb, what'd that make out of Teddy Kennedy, you know? But the point is, in Washington, a Southern accent is magic because Yankees always drop your IQ 40 points. And catching somebody off, you know, being underestimated, that's how old Sam Irvin and all these other Southerners, being underestimated is gold in Washington. And Ronald Reagan played the dumb Irishman, you know, the sort of, you know, shrug and all shucks type. And liberals believed it. And I would hear these liberals saying, Reagan had just run over them like a freight train, you know, and ripped them into pieces. And they would say, well, he's just not that smart. You know. And it
would, you know, I want to tell you, of course, your host there tonight wouldn't remember Jimmy Carter being president. Or how bad it felt to be an American at the time Jimmy Carter was president.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Oh, I remember it.
How we got the, how the whole world looked down on us and kind of mocked us. And then Reagan came in, and he made you proud to be an American again. And I truly believe that he was the greatest president in my lifetime. And,
well, he appointed me, so, but you know.
Well, that proves my point, doesn't it?
Yeah. although a friend of mine was working in the White House clearance, and there was a page in my last book that was a little bit critical of Reagan,
And so he took, I said, well, what'd you do about that? He said, I tore it out.
Well, sir, I appreciate you taking your time talking with me, and I enjoyed listening to you tonight. I'm going to get your book and read it, and I hope that you will be back soon.
Thank you very much. That's up to the gentleman sitting beside me.
Thank you so much, Mr. Whitaker.
And thank you very much for the call.
And thank you for your service, too, Mr. Whitaker.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
And you knew, I just want to ask this as a quick follow-up question, and I know Jess wants to ask you a point on policy, but you obviously met Reagan. You knew him personally?
Yeah.
Nice guy?
I didn't know him personally. I met him personally.
Right.
Staff doesn't do that.
Right. Okay,
yeah.
But...
I mean, I had a boss for 5 years, and I probably didn't talk to him continuously more than 5 minutes at a time. That's the kind of staffer. My job was to save him time.
Right. And so he wouldn't have to talk to you.
Yeah. No, sir. I didn't spend much. A lot of staffers did, but I figured, you know, he told me what to do, and I delivered it in his inbox.
And that's who we're talking with, Bob Whitaker, former Reagan appointee, Capitol Hill staffer.
And that's what my staff does for me, by the way, that book team I'm talking
you
about.
You got a good group. It's been an honor to work with them in my limited experience over the last couple of weeks as we've gotten all this set up. We're sitting here with Bob Whitaker, the author of the book, Why Johnny Can't Think, America's Professor Priesthood. You can check out and get more information about Bob and the book at readbob.com. And, again, our call-in number here for the last 15 minutes of the program tonight is 872-8862. That is a new number, and it looks like people are catching on, and we appreciate the callers that we've had tonight. 872-8862. Give us a call. Jess, you've got something on China you want to ask Bob.
Yeah, I want to go back to WhitakerOnline.org, and I'd encourage everybody, after they get through listening to this program, to go to that website if they haven't already. I know some of our callers have. And... To borrow a quote from one of your favorite people, I believe this was Karl Marx, he said, tell me how a society produces its goods and services, and I'll tell you everything else about that society. And following that, China, which has had economic growth that started at near zero or at zero, why has their economic growth, what caused it to be so low? What has caused it to boom? And what effects has that had on its society?
Okay, now, first of all, I'm an economist. You know, I was an economics professor. Political science professor for that. But let me tell you something. If you're taking poison and you stop taking the poison, your improvement is going to be remarkable, right?
Absolutely.
If you're a communist economy and you stop being a communist economy, your recovery is going to be startling. That's why they're getting huge growth rate right now. Well, they had an insane economic system. People don't realize it. Mao Zedong, he had this idea he suddenly decided one day that the more steel a country produces, the richer it is. And so they had the Great Leap Forward where they tried to produce steel. I mean, you know, that sounds insane. It happens to be true. And then they got rid of that system. And the reason they have this enormous economic growth is because they stopped taking the poison.
I've been to China, and the growth rate is phenomenal. And,
sure.
And they are actually encouraging their citizens now to get involved into... for lack of a better term, a capitalist-oriented type of economy. But why is it that your friends in these universities that we've talked so much about tonight...
Both of them?
Both of them. the liberal ones can't point to what's taking place in China and the easement of the communist government there and say, look, the system doesn't work.
As it says in my book, they like Marxism because Marxism says that the intellectuals will run the economy. The intellectuals will sit around and decide who gets what. Now, if you have an inbred bureaucracy, what do you think they're going to believe if they're professors?
So what you're saying is they are smart enough to know, and these aren't necessarily dumb people as far as, you know, they can't spell, they can't write, they can't read. They have eyes. And they can see that this doesn't work, but what you're saying is they still promote it because
that will give them the power. They will have the power.
They want people like them to run things.
Right.
It's very
simple. It doesn't matter to them that communism, Marxism, all of this, liberalism doesn't work, and they
the whole book keeps saying nothing they have tried ever, and in capital letters, works.
And that's because they, and we covered this on the show last night, is that liberals base their points off of emotion and social experimentation, and it's just a feel-good society of what they think things should be.
Well, that's what they sell. Now,
right.
What sells it to professors, you know, I have in here that I laughed out loud when I heard the preamble to the Soviet Constitution. It said, we are a nation of workers, soldiers, farmers, peasants, and intellectuals. And I actually laughed out loud in class. I was about 17 years old. And I looked around me, and nobody was laughing. I mean, look, if you say you're going to be the soldier, Greg here is going to be the peasant, and the other guy's going to be and I end up being the intellectual, what am I going to do?
You're going to boss everybody around, right?
I'm going to sit down there and tell you what to do. That's what Marxism is.
That's what it is.
And do you think that doesn't sell on campuses?
Well, and let me ask you this. We were talking about the former Soviet Union. You were just in Moscow for quite a long time. I don't know how long, several weeks.
Yeah.
Is Russia on the rebound?
Oh, big time. Now, you see, they have, whether you like it or not, Putin has given them a direction. Any direction will do. because they were in bad shape. I mean, but, no, they needed a direction, a center. And now, I lived through and watched Europe go through this after World War II.
Mm-hmm.
I was over there a lot of times. And Russia is going about twice as fast as Europe.
Really?
Mm-hmm. They're even having their birth rate's even going up.
Now, that's something that, you know, people don't realize, that the birth rate, Europe is dying. So I didn't know that myself, and I'm kind of at a loss for words. So Russia's birth rate is actually going up.
Well, it's not going up, you know. It's getting back to the replacement rate.
Right, they're saving themselves from extinction.
Yeah.
That's good to know. I didn't know that.
They also have a saying over there, don't trust anybody over 40.
give us one of the saying.
Now, back in the 60s, the hippies had that because anybody over 30 wouldn't be a communist. And, you know, that was the basic thing with Jerry Rubin or whatever his name was. But in Russia, it's just the opposite. You just can't imagine... I've been there, but you can't imagine how screwed up communism was. You had an economy for 70 years, 170 million people. You realize that there's not one single product that country produced that anybody wants?
And not only that, you made an interesting point on your website, WhitakerOnline.org, and that was you were sitting in an internet cafe in Russia, and what did you notice about the age?
They were all young, yeah. But, you see, an older person has learned to get along in an insane system by pleasing the right people, a little like academia, to please the right people. They had a special thing. And those people's promises are worth nothing. They don't know how to work. They don't know how to start anything. And the young people just don't want anything to do with them.
Well, Bob, and again, we've got about 10 minutes left in the interview tonight. This is your last chance to get the ear of Bob Whitaker at 872-8862. 872-8862. A lot of our listeners, a lot of things that we cover here, it's easy to identify the problem. Let's talk the last couple of minutes of this interview tonight about solutions. What happens to... I don't want to say there's much hope for, like you said, the professors. What happens to a wayward college student that's bought into this political correctness when they read your book?
I don't have a complete solution. Well, this is a very large. I always say what I say is very simple, but it's not easy.
But people have got to understand, you know, what the things that they've been spoon-fed for so many years. through government education might not be what's right. And if you can get them thinking, like I said, I believe solutions will present themselves.
I want us to go after the professors for the violation of trust. I want them to go, us to go after this religion called political correctness. I want us to get off the defensive. I want us to stop trying to save students one by one. And I want us to say, fire the whole group of them now.
And do you think that the products coming out of these universities would be ready, a little bit more ready to realize what's wrong in America after reading this book? I mean, book is proactive.
If they would read it.
If they would read it. Well, that's what we're going to do. We're doing our best to get it out. And again, you can get it at thepoliticalcesspool.org or readbob.com.
Now, let me remind you, we're populist, okay? Now, there's something about a populist. I'm not a man on a horse. I'm saying I need your help, and that means your brains, too. No, I'm serious now. We need to figure out how to attack this. That's what the readbob.com thing is. This is not a blueprint for changing America. This is the basic ideas. Get me some professors to eat alive, maybe, or are we going to, they have leaflets at readbob.com that can be put up on campuses. Another thing we could do is cause some sort of trouble, you know, not legal trouble so much as putting up and saying, we have a right to say things to people, and this is our campus.
Hey, First Amendment.
Yeah.
Gotta be defended.
Now, I'm sorry, but I need you to think about it. This is not my movement. I'm a populist.
Okay, now I want to touch on that word really quickly, because right now people are so hung up in conservative versus liberal, Republicans versus Democrat, and they don't see that they're both part of the problem and that there's no difference now. And I was talking in the break, you know, I resent the fact that the word conservative has been hijacked by the neocons, and, you know, it's no lie, I don't want to be called that anymore, but that's our tagline. The political cesspool, the South's foremost populist program. Define, and a lot of people don't hear it anymore. That's not a word that you ever see printed hardly. Define to people what a populist is.
Well, first of all, let me say about that word conservative that, remember I said that the established religion of the United States is political correctness. Anyone who disagrees with that is called a conservative. Everybody who disagrees with that is lumped together as conservative. There's the established religion, and there are what is called the sects, SEC. Now, hold it, gang. SECTS, the sects. And we're all a bunch of sects, you know, whether we're... And so that's the way it is now, basically. That, again, tells you that everybody who is not part of the established religion is a conservative.
Right.
And as far as they're concerned, we all look alike.
And but a populist, though, it's like what you said. You don't necessarily have all the answers, and you don't necessarily want to be a dictator. We believe in the rights and wisdom and virtues of the common people. And it's going to take us all coming together and working together.
Yeah, with your brain, too. Right.
Jess, you had something you wanted to add.
It all comes down to power, and I believe that what we're going to have to do is usurp the power of these professor priesthoods, and a good place to start is with your book, Why Johnny Can't Think.
Mm-hmm. And then, but then we are going to have to, now I'm used to staging, the reason I started a while ago bragging about all this business of being honorary South and all that, was to make, I have staged news events. Now this is a beautiful, but you could do that on campus. And I would help you with it. And readbob.com will help you with it. But we got to come up. We can't do all this stuff.
Well, let me ask you. You're talking about helping people out. And that's one of the things I love about you is you will get down and dirty. You're here in Memphis tonight from Columbia, South Carolina, to be on this show. You want to work with the people.
Yeah.
Email address. What's the email address that you'll read the emails to that people can contact you with? Is it on the website?
Sure. You can read me at bob@whitakeronline.org. Or you can, somewhere in readbob.com, you know.
All those go to you.
I'm always available.
All right, so bob@whitakeronline.org will go to you, will be read by you.
Sure.
And people can ask you questions and get more information.
There's a contact Bob thing button right there. So
right.
Sure.
And you
I'll
get
be
it
right
all...
back to them.
Good. Because people really
I'm just like
that.
You. I want them, you know, just like you're sitting there bouncing up and down, wanting them phone calls. I want to hear from people.
Well, that's what we want. Yeah. And we got about 2 minutes left tonight.
Please call him. He's about to go nuts.
Well, I was looking at my cell phone for the clock, actually. I got to keep time because I know we got another program coming in tonight. But,
man, this guy drives you nuts. He's got more energy than a dynamo. He's weird.
Well, if you only knew, Bob.
Yeah, see, I've gone on actual vacations with Jess. He can really attest to what I do when I'm unleashed. But
those are other things we can't talk about.
Right, yeah. Watch that license, man.
2 minutes, Bob. What's the last thing you got to say to the people of Memphis tonight?
I should come up with something profound, but I really haven't got much.
We've blown it out. I tell you what, though.
Where will you be going in the near future, Bob?
You got any public events scheduled?
Siberia, probably. No, I'm going home. I've been traveling all my life, running around the world, and I'm sick of it. And I love this new age when you have a computer and a telephone and
you
the whole
do it all.
I can call Moscow for 3 cents a minute. You know, I mean, this is terrific.
And you live in a beautiful state. I wouldn't want to leave there either. Yeah.
Well, it's my briar patch either way.
South Carolina.
Yeah.
You got it. Again, our guest tonight has been, and I tell you what, Jess, how about you? This has been some of the quickest 2 hours of your life.
Oh, it's been fast.
Yeah.
Enjoyable, but very fast.
And we're going to pick it up with Bob. We'll try to have him on at least once a month if he's agreeable to that. And again, our guest tonight has been Bob Whitaker, author of the book Why Johnny Can't Think, America's Professor Priesthood. Get a copy of it, buy it, and get other people to read it as well.
Amen, brother.
You can contact him at readbob.com or WhitakerOnline.org, and don't forget you can check us out any time of the day, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, www.thepoliticalcesspool.org. Bob, thank you so much for coming in tonight.
Bless you, sir.
Thank you for the time, Bob, and you'll be back next month. Thank you for tuning in tonight, listeners. We'll be back tomorrow. We're here every night, Monday through Friday, 7 to 9 on AM 1380 WLRM.